Hello, I am your host, Tabari McCoy, and welcome to A Tight 45. A Tight 45 is brought to you by Everybody's Records, located at 6106 Montgomery Road in the Pleasant Ridge neighborhood of Cincinnati, Ohio. Everybody's Records has been independently slinging music for 42 years. Swing in and dive into a deep catalog of music, including vinyl, or bring in your own CDs or LPs for cash or trade. Listening in from out of town? Be sure to check out their website at www.everybodysrecords.com. Gentlemen, welcome to this episode of A Tight 45. I am your host, Tabari McCoy, and on today's episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with longtime sports journalist, award-winning sports journalist, I believe I have correct, Mr. Paul Doherty of Cincinnati.com, who has written books with Johnny Bench, Chad Ochocinco Johnson, and about his daughter who was born with Down syndrome. And on today's episode, we have a great conversation about sports, especially in lieu of the ongoing can't stop, won't stop, never gonna stop COVID-19 pandemic. This is in lieu, of course, of the Super Bowl, which happened this past weekend. That's right. The Tampa Bay Tom Brady's took on the Kansas City barbecue hopefuls, and the Kansas City Chiefs got decimated. I was not surprised because the Chiefs had injuries to their offensive line, and they had a coach who is probably going to have a court date coming up soon. If you don't know, you can figure that out on your own if you do some internet research, as my man's got some struggles. And it's funny, a lot of people were talking about the weekend's halftime performance. I made my jokes on Twitter. You would know that if you're following me at Tabari McCoy, and if not, that's on you. But Super Bowl is just like, I don't even know at this point what it feels like. Like, it's just a weird event. Cause first of all, unless you were one of those, you know, COVID deniers or just out of your mind, you probably didn't go to a party this year. I got a chance to do Zoom with some friends. We got to sit around cracking jokes. So it was still a nice affair in that regard, but it was just a weird everything this year. I just know this, Patrick Mahomes was running around in the backfield, literally looking like a chicken with his head cut off, because I don't know what happened between that game that Tampa Bay played Kansas City earlier, besides those injuries, but Patrick Mahomes looked like he was inventing 80s dance moves in the backfield. Although my man has got to just throw the ball away at a certain point. I have not seen anybody hold a ball that long since, hey, you insert and finish your own joke there. But yeah, so the Super Bowl is over, which means football is gone until the fall. And right now we're getting ready to have Major League Baseball kickoff. And Major League Baseball is trying its best to become the NBA by allowing for the creation of super teams, because the LA Dodgers went out and got former Cincinnati Red Trevor Bauer to join their ranks, giving them a starting pitching rotation that would be best. I guess it's the equivalent of the NWO in the late 90s in professional wrestling. I think they got three Cy Young winners, a hot young prospect in Dustin May, who, if you haven't seen, has the most glorious orange afro this side of Will Ferrell in the movie Semi-Pro. They've got way too many options. They got Mookie Betts. They got Corey Seager. They got Cody Bellinger. Justin Turner in his COVID case will probably be back. It's just a lot. There's just a whole lot going on with the Dodgers. The San Diego Padres got Fernando Tatis and Manny Machado. They got Blake Snell. West Coast is trying to rise up. And the San Francisco Giants, you probably can't name but like maybe five of them. But they'll be back because it's the Giants and they're always sneaky good. So, you know, California is looking good. And then, of course, you got the Angels, who, despite having Albert Pujols and Mike Trout, couldn't seem to win a showcase shutout on Price is Right, let alone get to the playoffs. But we'll see what happens with that. The NBA still sucks. I don't know what's going on. People are trying to convince me that the NBA is good to watch right now. No, it's not, okay? Because the NBA is where all this power team mess started. The NBA right now is literally those dudes who play junior college ball and then would go to like their local, you know, gym and then beat up on dudes that are trying not to re-injure an ACL or relive some high school glory that they thought they had when they really don't, because they're now balding with two kids at home and a mortgage and in a marriage that's probably not going well. I can't watch the NBA right now. Maybe I'll watch it. Maybe I'll watch it come to playoffs. I've actually had more fun watching women college basketball because those games are either complete blowouts or you get those rare exceptions, like when Colorado beat, I think it was Stanford. I can't remember who they beat up on. I just know that the team that wasn't ranked beat the number one school in the country. And I like that in sports because I hate knowing the ending. I mean, that's why Marvel movies are at least somewhat decent, because someone might die. At least Marvel kills off somebody. Then again, that's what Disney does, because Disney been killing people in kid-centric movies since the start of their whole company run. Disney ain't happy until a kid feels crappy. They want somebody to be in the theater with a snot bubble, usually, especially with a Pixar movie, within the first 10 to 15 minutes. If there's not an entire row of Kleenex needed at a Disney Pixar movie, they ain't happy. I don't know what that is about. They just can't make happy movies. They're good movies, but they don't get happy to the very end after someone has had extreme adversity and sadness. It's almost like if you got the people that wrote that Will Smith movie, 21 Pounds, or maybe to a lesser degree, The Pursuit of Happiness, to make movies. It's just sad. They just do not like people being happy early on. I still say to this day that the first 10 minutes of Up should be a test for anyone that's a psychopath. You think somebody committed a murder, have them watch the first 10 minutes of Up, and if they don't cry, they got bodies buried somewhere. It's ridiculous. That movie is excellent, but it got the saddest 10 minutes of all time. Yeah, so there's that. Well, I think I have ranted enough about sports to get y'all ready for this conversation with Mr. Paul Docherty. So, coming up after the musical break, get ready for this episode of A Tight 45 with my guest, Mr. Paul Docherty, as we talk about sports, more sports, journalism, and life itself. So get ready, coming up after the break. Let's get on with the show. On today's show, I have the pleasure of being joined by a gentleman who is a fantastic sports journalist, but he's not just a sports journalist. He is a writer of the human experience and has, in addition to covering 5 Summer Olympic Games, has written books with several athletes, including Chad Johnson, aka Ocho Cinco, and his various personalities, and Big Red Machine and Baseball Hall of Famer member Johnny Bench. But he also is a man that can write from the heart, as he did in 2015 when he released the book An Uncomplicated Life about his daughter, who we will talk about later on in this episode. Ladies and gentlemen, I am joined today by Mr. Paul Docherty. How are you today, Doc?
I'm great, Tabari. Yourself?
Oh, you know, I'm hanging in there as best one can in month 3,000 of quarantine without losing what's left of my mind, because I already lost my hair. So there's not too much left to lose at this point. But, you know, so I was glad to have you on the show today. Thanks for taking the time out and figuring out this wonderful Zoom technology, because, you know, everything we do these days seems to involve a computer, whether it's banking, whether it's shopping. People are breaking up via Zoom now. So I can't wait to see all the bad late night lawyers shift their terrible ass to a digital capacity. Yeah. But, you know, I know how this is going to go these days. It's just too much. But in any case, wanted to talk to you. You've been a longtime sports writer, and you've been covering my hometown teams. But I know that even though you've been here for a while now, Cincinnati is not actually your hometown. So I was just curious, can you talk a little bit about your background and how you ended up in Cincinnati in the first place?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. This is great. I appreciate the chance to be able to share with you and the people who hopefully will watch this. I grew up outside of DC in Bethesda. Bethesda has been in the news lately, most recently for Donald Trump getting treated at the Naval Center, Naval Hospital for COVID, and then taking a little joyride. That's where I grew up, in Bethesda, Maryland. I went to college and wanted to do journalism because I can't do anything else. I mean, that's a simple truth. I can't fix a car. I can't build a house. You know, I know nothing about physics or chemistry or anything like that. The only thing I could do is write. And thank goodness some people think I'm good enough at it, I can make a living at it. But I worked all over. I started in a little town outside of Baltimore in Westminster, Maryland. Went from there to Norfolk, Virginia, and where I covered the University of Virginia and a certain tall guy named Ralph Sampson, who some of your older listeners, watchers, whatever, might remember, maybe not. I had a couple of one-on-ones with Michael Jordan when he played at North Carolina, and once apologized to me for being late to his interview with me.
Wow. Can
you imagine that now?
Not at all.
He comes here. Hey, see, it's sir, I'm sorry I'm late. You know, I'm like, okay, kid, don't do it again. I worked in Dallas for a while for a paper that no longer exists.
Which is like so many of them, unfortunately.
But. Correct. The Dallas Times-Herald was a great newspaper that's a memory now. And from there, I went to New York and worked at Newsday. And from Newsday in 1988, I came to Cincinnati, and I've been inflicting myself upon readers ever since.
Understood. You know, I was going to ask you, you talked about how and why you got into sports journalism. I was just curious, as long as you've been doing it, what keeps you in sports journalism? Because the nature of all types of journalism these days is changing. But, right. You know, you've been able to stay pretty much in the same vein because you write your morning line column for the Inquirer and Cincinnati.com. And, you know, you get some national coverage every once in a while. What keeps you interested in covering sport?
That's really a good question.
I try.
Because after a while, it becomes like anything else. It's a job. It's a great job. I've never regretted a day in my life doing it, but that doesn't mean that it's not a job. And as such, it has its moments. I think... why I still do it, it's still fun. It's gotten to where I've developed over the years kind of a style and a routine that I'm comfortable with and I think I'm pretty good at. I mean, I just turned 63, man. I'm not going to go charging off looking for a different thing to do with my life. So this is kind of where I am. I've had a couple of chances to leave and turned them both down, and I like living here. It's an easy place to live. Anybody who has lived elsewhere bigger understands how easy it can be to live here in terms of traffic, housing prices, ease of getting around. If most of the people can be pretty friendly most of the time. I don't know. It's like I said, at the jump, Tabari, I don't know how to do anything else. I'd love to be able to do something else, but I don't know what it is, and I'm kind of too late to figure that out.
I mean, so no cupcake shop in the future? No bakery.
No, I won't be unless my daughter is running it. I will not. I won't be baking. No.
I got you. Well, you know, you had a chance to cover, as I mentioned in the introduction, a lot of different athletes over your time. And, you know, you've gotten a reputation to be a good writer. And of course, with everyone who likes what you do, you're going to have people that don't like what you do. So I have a two-part question, if you will. How does one become, in your view, a good sports writer? And how do you deal with the psyche of those who are critical, be it the professional athlete or the daily reader?
To become good at it, read good writing. When I was an adjunct at UC many years ago, and I taught advanced journalism. Mm-hmm. And that was my advice to everybody. You want to write, whether it's newspapers, magazines, you know, whatever you want to do, books, novels, movies, read good writing. Read writers that you admire and read their stuff for style, not content. I still do that. It doesn't matter what I'm reading, books, magazines, papers, doesn't matter. Find people that you like, don't rip them off, obviously, but understand how they get from point A to point B in the story they're trying to tell. That was my biggest advice, remains my biggest advice. Read good writing and don't say no. I probably still have a job at the Inquirer after the rounds and rounds of layoffs because I've always tried to make myself useful. And one of the ways I did was to invent the blog. Mm-hmm. And that was way back in February of 06. And it's been pretty popular and gets a lot of proverbial page views. You know, that's what we live and die by now, page views and online subscriptions. And I don't know if I'd stuck to simply writing the newspaper column that I'd still be here. Mm-hmm. I might be working somewhere else or not working at all. I don't know, but I make yourself useful. That was another bit of advice. As far as a criticism, I'm okay with it if it's not personal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been here since 88, man. And if you don't have a thick skin in my profession, what I do when writing opinion, you're not going to last. Yeah. I've learned, especially in the last 4+ years, that there are a lot of people out there that don't particularly care for me or my opinions, and that's fine. I don't particularly care for theirs either. So I guess we're even. And the interesting thing is about all that, I really believe that if we didn't know how each other felt politically, we'd be okay. You know, I probably really like most of these people who don't like me, and vice versa. It's only because of that stuff, and everybody knows it these days, that we have the hostility. But as far as just general criticism, some of the criticism is pretty valid, and it keeps me on my toes and honest and maybe even a little bit humble. So I don't mind most of it, to tell you the truth.
I see. Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I was going to talk about the sports and the politics thing in a little bit, but to be around professional athletes, as we know, you and I both know from having been around them for as long as we have, some of them are very down to earth people. And then some of them at times, it can almost feel like you're talking to someone from another galaxy, let alone planet, with just how they do things. And I was just curious, being around as many professional athletes as you have been around, are there any commonalities and threads that you notice in terms of like the professional athlete psyche, if you will, whether it comes to how they handle the media or just their general approach to how they do anything in life? Or would you even say there is a professional athlete psyche, or does it vary by, you know, profession? I don't know, is a soccer player the same as a football player, is a hockey player the same as a summer Olympian that can out jump me and outrun me because I know I can't do those things on that level?
Another great question. You're in the right business, man.
You know, I'm trying.
I think there's a vibe. I don't know how else to put it. There's sort of a, I won't say a swagger, but there's a confidence about most athletes. Certainly a physical confidence. And that can be deceiving. A lot of these guys, when it comes down to it, are pretty insecure and pretty doubting of themselves. Especially when they're away from their chosen field, their profession, their sport. other than that, they're all a little bit different. Some of them demand, feel entitled, demand special treatment and let you know. Some of them aren't that way at all. And some of them have a perspective that extends beyond the game. And those are the guys that you value the most. The guys that I have found most interesting and most worthy of talking to are the guys that can talk about stuff other than what they do and are good at it. Joey Votto was pretty good at that. Michael Johnson, when he played here, he was good at that. People who understand there's life beyond the game and it's pretty important life and probably more important than the games themselves. Yeah, there are not a lot of guys like that, but there are enough of them that keep me coming back.
You know, and this past year, we had a new wrinkle thrown into the world with the COVID-19 pandemic, which is a topic that can go in 3,000 different directions. But just in sticking with the vein of sports, I was curious, what was it like for you as a reporter who's been used to covering sports, you know, a certain way? You know, you get into your habits, your routine, your travel, et cetera, et cetera. What was it like to cover the NFL, if you will, and the Reds, I guess? What was it like to cover sports during a global pandemic?
Well, I'll give you two answers to that. I'll tell you what's great about it. For me anyway, theoretically, as long as I've got an internet connection and a television, I can do my job from, you know, Bora Bora, right? I don't have to be at the ballpark anymore. Because there's no reason to be, because we can't get in the locker room or the clubhouse, and there's no access. So the only access is via Zoom, like what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't need to go to the ballpark to get on a Zoom conference after a game. I've always done a lot of work at home. If I'm not at a ballpark, I work at home. I don't have an office downtown, and I love that. But now it's strictly at home. I mean, there have been literally months, Tabari, where I don't change sweatpants and t-shirts. And I mean, I do change them, but it's the same outfit, right?
Right, right.
I mean, it's really an imposition, man. If I have to wear shoes that have shoelaces or shirts that have buttons,
right?
You know, because I'm so used to just throwing on whatever I got. I mean, even with this, you don't know what I got on or if I got anything on.
No, what to say that for a premium podcast view.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, very premium. But that's been good. I mean, it's okay doing that. It's pretty easy. You know, you don't have to worry about commuting anywhere. You don't have to worry about catching a plane or if the hotel reservation is still there. The bad part is, I mean, a lot of what I do, because I write opinion, is off the record stuff, right? I mean, a lot of what I rely on is being able to walk into the Reds clubhouse at 4:30, find so-and-so and ask him such and such, totally off the record. Mm-hmm. And that gives me the insight into that I need to be able to do a lot of what I do. And that's completely gone. I mean, you can't ask a guy, hey, off the record on a Zoom cast.
With the PR because director watching.
You're not the only one to Zoom cast generally. And even if you were, there's usually a Reds or Bengals PR person standing right there.
Right.
So that part's out the window. I mean, I'm not going to spring training for the first time in 30 years because they're going to deny us access to the entire complex.
Mm-hmm.
In Goodyear. And it's not worth it for me because I don't do a lot of on the record work.
Mm-hmm.
So that part's bad. You have no ability to develop relationships, to lean on the ones you've already gotten over the years and try to figure some stuff out with casual conversations with people that trust you. There is none of that right now. And that hurts me as a writer, big time. Because understanding the player side of it is really important into what I try to do.
Understood. You know, and a lot is always made about, you know, athletes speaking through the media. There's the current situation as we're recording this with Deshaun Watson. I don't know what team he's going to end up with next, you know, this upcoming season and whatnot. Do you think that the media in sports in particular gets a bad reputation, or is it an accurate, you know, representation or a reputation rather when it comes to, you know, different things? Because, you know, where everybody knows Adrian Wojnarowski is the big NBA guy. People look at Adam Schefter, you know, here's the latest rumors. Do you think that that whole aspect, because you mentioned a lot that you deal with, you know, confidential sources and things of that nature, especially in covering teams that, well, let's just say I was a young man with hair when they were both doing it, they're doing better. You know, do you think that the media sometimes becomes the scapegoat for the athlete or even the coach or the management?
Occasionally. I don't. Again, that's sort of like the criticism I get. It doesn't really bother me all that much. And there are times when we deserve to be criticized. You know, when I've done it, I've taken a shot that was unfair. You try not to. You don't want to. I love it when people say to me, you're just trying to sell papers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, duh. but second of all, I don't sell papers that way. You know, after I've been here long enough, I hope I sell papers just because people have been reading me for a long time and enjoy it. I don't need to go out and write something controversial or from the hip to quote unquote sell papers. I don't. People read me no matter what. That's nice. I think it's like anything else, Tabari. It's you can't judge the whole group of people by a couple people that you come across.
Right.
I also think, especially in politics these days, it's become a whole lot easier to blame media for anything that you don't like. You know, or, you know, fake news and look what they're doing. Look at the slant they're taking. And some of that's true. A lot of it is just excuses for your bad behavior.
Yeah, I understand. Well, you know, because I was curious about that, because we've talked about, you know, a little bit now, and I was going to ask this later, but I'll get into it now. The world has become so intersected with every other segment. You know, athletes are worried about their brand, not just their performance on the field, but, you know, but how are they selling their various sneakers or their energy drinks? You know, the NFL, after its various years of the Colin Kaepernick situation, I'll just put a button on it like that. Now this past season, we saw all the different inundations of Black Lives Matter or messages in the end zone and different commercials and things of that nature and whatnot. You know, and a lot of people this past year were saying, oh, I need my sports. I want my sports and things of that nature, because it's become our escape, you know. But sports is a billion, if not trillion-dollar industry now. Mm-hmm. You know, as someone who covers it for your living and then, you know, watches the way it affects other people, when it comes to specifically American society, you know, do you think that we, and I'm trying to think of how to word it where it's not like, yeah, but do you think that we put so much emphasis on sports that it's almost ridiculous at times?
Maybe some people do. I don't know, because I've been here for so long and the teams have generally been so disappointing and broken so many hearts that I can't say that there are a lot of real fanatics here anymore. I think there are as many cynics as fanatics, and I don't blame them. If I were a fan of any of these teams, I'd feel the same. Do we put too much emphasis on it? That's hard for me to answer. I can only answer from me personally. I do not. I never have. I never got into this business because, wow, I get to go to games for free. You know,
mm-hmm.
I've been a fan my whole life, but not a fanatic, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I've written about sports because it's compelling stuff and it's human and comprises the human experience and all that stuff. Not because I'm a big fan. Mm-hmm. I don't care if the Reds or Bengals win or lose or anybody. I always say I root for me, and that's true. Until one of the people I cover says, "Hey, I really hope you write a great column today." I see no real reason to root for them other than naturally writing about winning teams. Mm-hmm. People want to read it. The athletes are nicer to deal with. That helps me. Therefore, in a way, I root for the Reds and the Bengals and Xavier and Cincinnati. You know, mm-hmm. Everything's better when teams win.
Yes.
But I don't get real caught up in it. I go cover a game like the infamous 2015 Vontaze Burfict Pittsburgh Steelers playoff game, and I write about it, and I'm really involved in it in the moment. But then I go home, and I gotta help my kid with homework, you know. Mm-hmm. And what's more important in the grand scheme? So I don't know if I answered your question or not. I don't get overly involved in sports, but some people do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe, you know, too much. Well, you know, it's funny. You made me think of something when you said that, because I was thinking to myself, you know, I am a person that's a fan of, you know, various teams, various athletes. I'm a sports polygamist, because if I had to root for just one team in many sports, I would never get any joy. So, you know, I'm a big sports polygamist in that regard. I digress. I was curious, have there ever been times when you know, there's a guy that you like? You know, he's a good person, but his performance on the field is just trash. How do you balance that, you know, trying to be human, but trying to do your job aspect of your job?
There's really only one way to do that. And that's to essentially write what you see. Don't sugarcoat it. Don't add anything to it. Don't be flip about it. If a guy screws up, write that he screws up. Most 99% of the guys you cover, the athletes will be okay with that. If you don't take a shot at them sort of gratuitously, or make fun of them, or say you're the reason your team lost, which is almost never the case, you just play it down the middle. This is what happened. And this is what happened because of what happened. Yeah, they're okay with it.
You know,
you're a human. So mm-hmm. you do let relationships affect what you write. But I try really hard not to. Will I give a break to a guy who's good to me? I try not to. And subconsciously, I probably do, you know,
and on the flip side of that, Do you sometimes think that fans don't understand that it's not your job to shill for the team? You know, it's like, hey, I'm going to tell you what happened. You know, it's nice when they win, but I can't be overly positive in the face of it. You know, because teams have announcers. Every team has it, whether it was Harry Carey with the Cubs or our own very enthusiastic former offensive lineman with our team that, you know, I say our team like I'm on it and like you're on it. But the Bengals, for those of you listening, I'm a Bengals fan. Please send money. Do people have trouble separating that sometimes and they don't get that?
You know, I think fans are a lot more sophisticated now than they were even 10 years ago. I don't get a lot of that anymore. Why aren't you rooting for us? I'm not us. You don't want me and my job to be rooting for you.
Right.
And I'm lucky in that I have a lot of latitude in what I'm allowed to write. And obviously I'm not paid by the team, nor do any of the teams here have to approve me to do their games, you know? I mean, there are still some people who think that I'm too negative. I don't like that. That really bothers me because I'm not negative. Mm-hmm. You know, I basically say to these people, I don't create the reality, I reflect it. In other words, I'm only writing what's happening on the field. And a lot of the time in this town, what happens on the field stinks. And I'm not going to insult your intelligence by saying it's great or, mm-hmm. gee, it's better than it looks. Or, you know, the Reds or the Bengals or whoever, they're really trying. Well, big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, a team is going bad when the coach starts applauding and mentioning the effort. Well, we played hard today. Well, good for you. That's what you're supposed to do. You know, mm-hmm. you don't get any brownie points for trying hard. You're a professional. Right. This is a knothole. But anyway, to answer your question, I don't find that as much among fans as I used to.
I got you. And, you know, on the flip side of that, you kind of mentioned something I was going to ask, because we've been around different various, you know, coaches, and I've sat in enough press conferences where it feels like the coach feels like everyone in the room that's not them is an idiot or a moron. You know, and it's just sometimes funny sitting there watching somebody, like, you do realize they're getting ready to like hammer you as soon as you stop speaking, right? Because you're kind of acting like a jerk, and that's putting it nicely. Do you think that, you know, some of like the people in those high pressure positions, you know, really have a respect for what you guys do, or do they almost see you like a necessary evil?
No, it depends on who you're dealing with. Some guys like to do it. Some guys don't like it. The best guys, in my opinion, the best coaches in dealing with the media use every opportunity to spin it to their advantage, whatever the situation is. I thought a guy like Rick Pitino was a master at that. I don't know what Pitino thinks of the media, good, bad, or indifferent. I know that he knew how to get his message across via the media. Some guys would rather not deal with it at all. A guy like Marvin Lewis, who I like a lot and still have a relationship with, he was, in press conferences anyway, he just didn't want to be bothered. It wasn't that he was above it all or thought he was better than us. He just didn't really think it was all that important. One-on-one, Marvin was great. Off the record, one-on-one, especially in the offseason, fantastic. We're just talking like friends, great. In assembled, big, crowded press conferences was not good at all. Each guy's a little different, and I think they all view it as a necessary evil. But the slick ones know how to turn it to their advantage.
Very well said. Speaking of that, just a very quick question. What is the one phrase that coaches say that drives you nuts? That's a nothing phrase, but they all say it. Cause I've seen so many different coaches say certain things during press conferences, and it's like it's their throwaway line. And of course they're all escaping me, but I mean, they all do it.
Yeah. You know, if that were something I was just thinking about by myself, I could come up with five answers. But now that you put me on the spot, I really can't come up with any. But you're right, they all do it. The typical cliches, you know,
it's a team sport.
This one's behind us now. We're gonna move forward. You know, in the case of Zach Taylor, we're changing the culture. You know, that's sort of a buzz phrase anymore that I don't like. But you're right. They all have the kind of go-to things. And the only time I get mad about coaches in press conferences is when they insult your intelligence and they know they're doing it. You know, they tell you something that you know is complete bullcrap, but they say it anyway because it sounds good, and they're not talking to you necessarily. Anyway, they're talking to the people out in radio land or TV land that are listening and might believe what they're saying.
Understood. You know, I was gonna say, is there a memorable press conference or a memorable moment that stands? Oh, you're smiling on this one. Is there a memorable one that stands out in your mind, like something that you're never gonna forget, you know, that happened when you were either covering a team or at an event?
Well, a couple of them were local and one was very national. I was in San Diego in 88 or 89. I think it was the year before the Bengals were in the Super Bowl, the Redskins and the Broncos.
Okay.
And I was there for the infamous Doug Williams press conference, where the first question to Doug Williams was, "Have you always been a black quarterback?" How do you answer something like that? That was one. I was there for the infamous press conference where Mike announced that they were bringing Marvin back. And I've never, it was like being at a funeral. It was completely awful because I think they were coming off 4-11-1 or whatever, and everybody assumed that was it. And Mike brought him back after that, and it was the most uncomfortable, solemn news conference I've ever attended. And then there was one, I think my first year, Sam Weich, after a game, I forget what he said to me, but he and I got into it back and forth at the press conference where we were kind of yelling at each other. Mm. And I'm this little wet behind the ears, you know, think I know everything columnist. And Stan was one of those guys who didn't mind making a scene, you know, as we know. He's the only coach I ever knew dressed in a loincloth after a game, you know. But we got into it.
Check your Google for that one, kids.
I think he said to me after I asked him a question, you know, I should have known it was going to be you. You can't keep your mouth shut. And I said, neither can you. And he said, I'm a whole lot better at what I do than what you than you are at what you do. And I said, that's your opinion. And it kind of went on from there. So those are a few. Normally it's pretty civil. You know, people like to say, well, why aren't you more confrontational with these people when they haven't played well? Why don't you confront them? And the simple answer is because it doesn't work. Mm. I mean, you want me to get mad at these guys while I'm asking them questions that'll do nothing but make them mad? Then you're not going to get any answers that are worth printing. So you have to be as best you can diplomatic. You're after answers. I'm not Mike Wallace, you know.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure some things out here. And if you're confrontational and aggressive about it, you're not going to get any answers. So that's really not a good way to interview anybody.
You know, thinking about that, I remember I'd asked another reporter in the past, I said, what's more fun to cover, a good team or a bad team? And he said, a good team is easy to cover, but it's more fun to cover a bad team. And, you know, I was just curious, what is your take on that?
I've covered enough bad teams that I don't know who this person was or how many bad teams he or she might have covered, but maybe not enough. I mean, you're asking me, would I rather cover a 2-14 Bengals team or a Bengals team that the 1988 team that went to the Super Bowl? And I'm going to say, oh, I'd rather cover a 2-14 team. No, it's never more fun covering a bad team. The worst kind of team is it covers is the 8-8, 7-9, you know, 75-81 win baseball team. I'll agree with that. If you're just right down the middle and never do anything spectacular or anything really goofy, that's bad. But there's no way in life I'd rather cover a bad team than a good one.
I got you. Can you talk just a little bit about like what it's like to have to – because baseball season, especially like football season's long-ish, but baseball's 162 games. It's the only sport that I can think of that goes through three seasons between spring, summer, and fall. How, as a writer, how do you keep from falling into the dregs of this is still going on and this team sucks?
I don't know. I've somehow managed to do that a lot. I mean, the Reds have had a stretch between the last time they made the playoffs up until this past year where they were just awful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Brian Price years. I don't know, man. It's just you take them one game at a time. You try to find something with every column that you think is interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to the ballpark on a Sunday afternoon and Luis Castillo pitches great because nobody can hit his changeup. So you go down to the clubhouse afterwards and you write about his changeup,
mm-hmm.
and where he learned it and how he learned it. You try to find different ways to say things. It's hard. I mean, that's another reason why I'd always like to cover a good team than a bad. With the Bengals, I don't know, man. I got to the point, you may not remember this, but I got to the point in the 90s where I would do goofy stuff like, you know, have readers write me and tell me why they needed me to rake their leaves on a Sunday afternoon.
I remember this because I remember it happening in the 2000s as well.
Yeah, and I ended up literally on Bengals home game. I spent the day raking leaves for a woman in Hyde Park. I said the only requirement is you can't have the game on the radio, and that's what I did. I didn't go to the game. I wrote about raking leaves. And that's how bad it got. You know, I in the infancy of the internet, again, in the early 90s, maybe, I took an online poll. You know, this was game 13, right? I said, I'm going to bag the rest of this year. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start writing basketball. I'm going to start writing other stuff, whatever. I'm not going to cover the Bengals anymore. What do you think? Mm-hmm. And we took a poll. I said, if the majority votes for me to continue covering the Bengals, I will.
Okay.
Like 70% said, don't bother. And the other 30% said, we hate you anyway. We don't want to read you. So don't write anything.
I got you.
Anyway, I don't know if that answers your question, but
right. Oh, it's fine. You just got to take it one question at a time. That's all you can do.
Higher or low.
See, I knew those cliches were going to come back if we started talking about them. You know, away from sports, however, I mentioned it a little bit earlier. You were able to write a book that was a bit more personal for you about your daughter, because your daughter, Jillian, correct, is the name.
Yeah.
I know I've seen her at some of the various radio shows you've done in town, but your daughter was born with Down syndrome, and she is now a grown adult, and she is married. And she has a pretty remarkable life. And I remember that you have talked about it a little bit before. I was just curious, for one, as someone who tells stories for a living, what made you decide that you wanted to share your story about being the parent of a child with Down syndrome? And then just, you know, what have you learned about life from her story?
Well, I wrote the book because people told me I should. Honest to goodness, I never considered that Jillian was a book simply because she was just another kid like my son. We didn't treat her any differently. I mean, she was just our child, and other people might have thought she was interesting or whatever they thought. Mm-hmm. We just thought this is our child, and therefore I'm not writing a book about my son. You know, why would I do that? You know,
right.
But enough people told me that I should write it that I said, okay, I wrote it. Well, what I've learned, I don't know, man. How much time do you have?
Oh, we got time. It's my show.
No,
I can do what I want.
I know. Yeah, you can do what you want. You're in command here, Tabari. I've learned a lot, man. I'm trying not to stray into the cliche. I'll just say that as much as anything, I've learned that everyone is different. Everyone is unique. Everyone has his or her own talents. And to allow everyone to define themselves. And that covers the broad spectrum of everything we talk about in society now. Everything. Do not judge the proverbial book by its cover. Be empathetic enough to see what's really happening. Don't assume. That has impacted me in ways so far beyond my daughter's life. I can't even tell you. Everybody's an individual. Everybody deserves to be treated that way and deserves to be treated with respect until they show otherwise. I wouldn't have gotten that I don't think, at least not to the extent that I've gotten it, without the birth of my daughter. There are a couple of things that we learned to live by in raising her, which was, one of them was expect, don't accept. You know, expect your child to be treated the same as every other child in school. Expect him or her to get the same education. Expect teachers to do with them everything they possibly can, everything they do for other kids, and accept, A-C-C-E-P-T, nothing less. We battled our asses off to get Jillian out of into regular classrooms, regular ed classrooms. And we continue that battle to make sure that she stays employed. Mm-hmm. It's never ending. Another one that we went by was to see her and not look at her. Mm. There's a huge difference between seeing and looking at someone. You know, to see someone, you have to be empathetic. You have to be open. You have to be non-judgmental. To look at someone, you can't be any of that. You can just look at someone and judge them by what they look like and right there. And that doesn't do anybody any good. So see, don't look. That's about it. I mean, I could go on and on, but the acceptance of each person as an individual has made the biggest impression on me, and for the good. It's been fantastic.
Oh, very well said. You know, I know we're getting a little bit closer towards the end of our time. Before I forget, where can people find you these days? Plug yourself and where they can catch you online should they want to read, whether it's for enjoyment or to send you those lovely tweets that I'm sure you get sometimes after some of your columns.
Well, such a boring guy. If you really technically wanted to find me, you could come to my house or go to the park where I walk my dog, because I'm there or asleep about 99% of the time. But otherwise, my Twitter thing is at Enquirer Doc, but I hate Twitter, so I don't post that much on Twitter. I literally loathe Twitter.
Understood.
Doherty at Enquirer.com. What else do I have? I don't know. I have Twitter. I'm on Facebook.
No, is there an Instagram yet?
I got an Instagram, but I forget what it is.
Okay. Well, see, I don't know if you're going to. Are you going to be joining the TikTok revolution since that's the next craze?
I don't even know what that is, man. That's a clock, right? No, I'm serious. I am blissfully uninformed when it comes to social media. The only reason I'm on social media is because my job requires it. I found that with Facebook, it's probably caused me more problems than it's worth. I don't really do much Twitter. I certainly very rarely read what people have to say about me on Twitter, because I think most of them are idiots. I don't respect them. I don't respect what they do on Twitter. Therefore, I don't read them. So the best way to get me is still the old-fashioned way. Go to the Enquirer, read the blog, The Morning Line, which I write Monday through Thursday every week. And I write about everything. Mm-hmm. A lot of days I don't write anything having to do with sports. I'll write about a road trip I might have taken. I'll write about cars. I'll write about beer I like, or bourbon, or cigars, or whatever. It's a lot more fun than the sports column for people who aren't big sports fans.
Understood. So
there's that, and then there's, you know, Cincinnati.com, and there's the column. And you can find The Morning Line, the blog, on there as well.
There you go. You know, now in the pre-COVID times and in the before times, as I now call it, you used to always do a lot of the Bengals radio shows, and you would be able to put players on the hot seat. So
yeah.
Before we end, Paul Doherty, are you ready for a tight 45, quick, less than 45 questions hot seat?
Yeah, I'm ready. Go ahead.
All right. If you could own one team in sports, what team would you own and why?
That's a great one.
I try.
One team in sports. Does it have to be a big time NFL type?
Nope.
NBA,
it can be
baseball.
It can be any sport, any team.
How about the Asheville Tourists?
Ah.
You know who the Asheville Tourists are?
Weren't they a minor league baseball team? Yes.
The Class A team in Asheville.
Okay.
Owned by the DeWine family, as a matter of fact.
Oh, Ohio's governor. I did not know that.
Correct. Very cool little stadium in my favorite town in America. Great setting. I love baseball. Yeah, the Asheville Tourists.
Okay.
Every night would be, you know, buy one, get one beer night, right?
Okay, see, you've already got the promotions thinking. See, you're already on your way there.
There you go. Favorite, they already do that.
Oh, well, there you go. Favorite athlete you've ever covered?
I've been asked that a lot. And you know what? By and large, most of these guys are really great guys. I don't have a problem. I've had very few problems over the years, believe it or not. It depends on what you're looking for. Joey Votto is way up there. I mean, he and I have had our moments over the years, because mm-hmm. I disagree with him on his approach to hitting on occasion. Like, I know a lot about hitting, right? But anyway, Joey Votto is great. I mean, he can talk about just about anything, and he's smart, and he'll give you time if you need it. And I don't know, man. Almost every offensive lineman I've ever covered mm-hmm. is a great guy. Whitworth was fantastic. Before him, Willie Anderson was fantastic. For whatever reason, offensive linemen are humble guys.
I got
most
you.
Of them. Just very, very good to deal with. Let me think back. I have to go back a ways. I used to talk to Lee Johnson about stock trading. He was a punter for the Bengals.
Oh, yeah.
Before your time. He was good. Todd Benzinger, big music fan. I would talk to Todd about music. Eric Davis, to this day, is such a, to me anyway, an honest, candid, down-to-earth guy. I love talking to Eric Davis. I love Eric Davis as a person, as a man. I don't know. Okay. That's about it. Most of these guys are pretty good.
I got you. Baseball Hall of Fame. Steroids guys get in, banned forever. Which one?
Banned forever. I've voted for the Hall of Fame for like 23 years. I've never voted for any of those guys, and I never will. A-Rod's coming up next year. No way. It's funny about that, Tabari, the younger voters will vote for the steroid guys. The older voters do not. And that's been pretty consistent. And I'm proud of the fact that my vote has helped keep Bonds and Clemens and those two guys in particular, but other guys too, McGuire, Sosa and Palmeiro, people like that. I'm proud that my little part in it has kept those guys out of the Hall of Fame.
I got you. And what game in history that you were not able to attend would you wish you had a ticket for? One sport, one game or event, because I know you've been to the Olympics as well. What event in sports would you have loved to been there to witness personally?
Man, I don't know. There's so many. Right off the top of my head, probably the first Ali Frazier fight.
Ooh, okay.
And then the third Ali Frazier fight.
Okay.
Thrill in Manila.
Okay.
I don't know. I've been to so many great things. But those two stick. Those just jumped out right away.
Okay. And then last question. You've traveled extensively throughout your career. Should we ever get back to a place where we can travel further than maybe to the mailbox without having to worry about catching a virus? What is your savvy travel tip for people that they may not know, whether it's with dealing with hotels, travel arrangements, where to eat on the road? What would be your best piece of travel advice?
The day you start your job where that requires you to travel, sign up for every rewards program you could possibly sign up for, and then get that credit card, right? I've been a Marriott guy for God almighty 40 years. Early in my career when I was working in Norfolk, Virginia, covering Virginia, and I knew I was going to have to travel, I got a Marriott visa, right? And I got a Marriott points thing, and we have never, I don't recall ever paying for a hotel room on the road when it comes to family travel. Well, I've always had Marriott points for everything. And I did the same with Delta for a while. I used SkyMiles. That probably surprises you a little. I don't eat out a lot. Food's not my thing. So when we go on the road, unless I'm in New Orleans, I won't go to big restaurants. I couldn't care less about that stuff. So I don't have any tips on that. A hotel is a hotel. The last 5 years or so, I've started getting away from my beloved Marriotts and stayed at Airbnbs just because they're more interesting and different. I would recommend that if you don't care about the points. But if you're 22 or 23 years old right now and you travel a lot, yeah, man, hit those rewards.
And there you have it. Well, folks, that'll do it for this episode of A Tight 45. I want to thank my guest, Mr. Paul Dougherty, and thank you for listening. And be sure to come back and check out next week and all the episodes you may have missed, because I know you get busy. But thank you for tuning in to this episode of A Tight 45. And that is a wrap on this episode of A Tight 45. I want to thank my guest, Mr. Paul Dougherty of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Of course, make sure you check out his Morning Line blog at cincinnati.com, and feel free to check out his books, available wherever you can probably find books, because, you know, That's what happens when people write books. And if nothing else, I hope you had a good time listening to the episode. That is always the goal. And feel free to drop me a line. You can reach me, of course, by emailing Tabari@TabariMcCoy.com, checking out my website, which has the same TabariMcCoy.com destination. And you can catch me on all the various social media channels, Instagram, where I share way too many photos of me exercising and my autograph collection, Twitter, where I actually crack the most one-liner jokes that have a short shelf life, and Facebook, where I post whatever in the blue hell I feel like posting because it's my Facebook page and I can do that. So, all right, I think that is enough for this time. So by now you should be hearing the lovely R&B soundtrack beginning to kick in the background as we get ready to ride out into that audio sunset. So, of course, be sure to check back for future episodes. Leave a review wherever you happen to get your podcast. And until next time, I am Tabari McCoy, thanking you for listening to this episode of A Tight 45.